Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST. Code ACAST.
That's the second time it's gone off.
They never go home, those boys.
The second captain's
world service.
And I said, I want to win the league, but I want to win it better. You can understand that, can't you?
Yes.
Good lad.
So he's almost like having a second captain in the team.
Second captain, first captain, whatever.
I'm waiting for the first GA manager to show up wearing a shirt and tie on the sideline. It's literally never happened. Mick O'Dwyer used to tuck his jumper into a pair of tracksuit bottoms. Other than that, it's all very safe. There's nobody out there trying new things in the world of GA management fashion. Those are the words of Kieran Murphy last Thursday on the World Service, in light of Sean Dyche ditching the suit and leading Everton to safety in the Premier League in the tracksuit. There has been blowback, Murph.
My thinking has evolved on...
Oh, good. Probably helped along by a number of people.
The sheer amount of documentary evidence that I've been presented with.
Hey, again.
Owen, how are you?
Brenko points out you did not even have to go beyond the example of Mikko himself to find a GA manager wearing a suit on the sideline.
I should have said in my lifetime, you know? By the time 1982 had come... Well, maybe Mikko was still wearing a suit in 1982.
So it looks like he was wearing a suit earlier.
It was early on.
Much like that, he just switched to tracksuits.
Yeah, I think really what happened was that the idea of tracksuit bottoms and tracksuit tops and the leisure wear more generally wasn't actually a thing in the 1970s, really, to the extent that I thought it was. You know, really, at the end of the day, these people do have to wear clothes. These were the only options available to men at that time.
Suits.
Possibly, you know, nicely knitted sweaters as well.
Damien Britton says one of Mikko's rivals in the 80s, three times Ulster Championship winning manager, former president, come on Lou Classgale, and my old headmaster, Sean McCaig, always wore a suit on the sideline.
Yeah.
He was a great man whose presidency has been underrated, but I hope his sartorial trailblazing is never forgotten. It is. I like the photo that's been sent on here. Nice cut of a suit, simple black suit, white shirt, black tie. Not quite a skinny tie, but skinnier than were available at the time.
He looked presidential Sean McCaig.
Presidential. You don't have that one in front of you again.
No,
via email. But as for nobody trying new things, did you ever pay attention to your own former manager at DCU, Mickey Whelan?
I did love this odd song.
Bruno has sent one here of Whelan as Dubs manager with a navy blazer, blue polo neck and cream chino combo that would have given any mid-90s Italian football manager a run for their money.
Yeah, I just wish the trousers were a better fit. They're very baggy on them. They're not a very stylish trouser. That would be my one.
I mean,
the roll neck
needs,
is just beautiful.
He needs to pull them up a little bit.
Yeah, he does. They're ill fitting, but they're also a bit too baggy. I mean, Mickey's in tremendous physical condition and still is. I mean, I'm not saying he doesn't have the pains to carry off. You know, slightly. They're not even very well pressed. Let's be honest.
Well, they might have been at the start of the day. It's the heat of a difficult championship campaign.
Yeah, I mean, the photograph that we were presented with, I'm pretty certain that's Kilmacook Crokes' own Tommy Lyons loitering with intent behind him.
Oh, yeah.
Sniffing his job, of course.
Arse boxing. Oh, God. Johnny McDonald. What about Heffo, the original smart casual manager with an array of Lyle and Scott V-necks in his wardrobe? Yeah, Heffo looked
very,
well.
Very true. And, I mean... Message comes from Temple Oak Sing Street teammate of mine and a very dapper dresser, Johnny McDonald is, so I would respect his opinion on this.
Michael Dunn, Ken, this is your favourite one. He puts Sean Boylan's get up on the table. What's the great Boylan wearing?
This is amazing. Well, just, I don't know, he's gone for like a kind of an all white or a white shirt, sort of cream or ecru chino, mm-hmm. with Puma Kings.
It's a great look.
Yeah, it's a great look. No, I mean, it's good.
It's stuff. All about having the confidence to put it off. And Sean Boylan is just bestriding that pitch. Yeah. Also, we should mention that the most famous accessory in the history of Meath GAA, certainly of that vintage, is on display in the same photograph.
Yeah, Colm O'Rourke's knee bandage.
Literally, you can't even see Colm O'Rourke. You can just see the jersey number a little bit and the big knee bandage.
Massive knee bandage.
He seemed to wear it quite a lot. A couple of shouts for John Mon's shorts. There's one image that appears to show Mon patrolling the touchline on a hot summer's day wearing a, I don't want to say nothing but a Bonnestore bib. I mean, I'd imagine the shorts are on there.
Yeah.
But it appears there's no top on underneath the bib.
Yeah, that's I mean, he has to wear the Bonnestore bib. I mean, that's part of that, you know, open the Drury Ifigul there, Owen. You will see that managers do have to wear some manner of distinguishing, something that says Bonnestore on it. But I mean, just be thankful for that bib, because it looks pretty hot, and I'm pretty sure John Mon wouldn't be a small bit bothered if you had to go skins v shirts.
It's the it's the Cameroon 2002 thing.
Remember? Well, no, I think the shorts are separate. I mean, the bib is, you know, they are two separate items of clothing.
Yeah. No, the Cameroon had separate items. It was the sleevelessness of the shirts that caused the
But wasn't they were wearing like a onesie?
Yeah, I know. I thought that was that they were banned, but then...
No, the thing that was banned was their sleeveless shirt.
Oh, okay.
So I don't know if it was like a one piece.
I thought it started off as a one piece and then... Maybe I'm wrong. Either way, Mahan absolutely carried it off with aplomb.
I'm glad your thinking has evolved. The impeccably attired duo of Michael Murphy and Oisin McConville are on the show today. You yourself suggested Jamie Walls snood as a trailblazing piece of fashion, Murph. Jamie is on the podcast tomorrow with Maddie Clerken for World Service members. SecondCaptainStop.com, £5 a month plus VAT if you want to hear that. Will Jamie and Mal put some respect on Antrim's name after their win against Wexford?
We died a death with 1,000 swords this week. You know, they took out the swords after what happened in Nolan Park last weekend. You have to remember, a huge amount of that team went to the field last weekend, hadn't hit a ball all year. They gave everything they could last week to get everything they could today. Easy targets. That's what we were all week. You know, we're fed up of moral victories. That's a victory here for the people of Antrim that were ridiculed during the week of what they're doing.
I thought he was going to leave it there, you know, with one in the eye for the critics and so on, and then you're moving on to the positives. And then back to just another little dig at the end. That's Darren Gleeson, the Antrim manager, speaking on RT. He's not the only one who feels Antrim aren't getting the respect they deserve. We got an email last week equating the 10 big rugby nations with the 10 big hurling counties. For example, Australia, Cork, faded giants, once the vanguard of innovation, now scrabbling around for an identity. Still capable of producing world-class players, but results often embarrassing. That kind of stuff. Conor McCrossan has an issue. As a devotee of the much maligned, inverted commas, Antrim hurling team, I was disgusted to hear the grave omission of the Saffrons from the rugby hurling counties on Wednesday show. What made matters worse was that counties in the Joe McDonagh, such as Offaly, Leash and Westmeath, the wild Midland Island men, got a mention ahead of us. The Antrim hurlers are now in their second year of the Leinster Hurling Championship, and I was delighted to see that the hurling gods decided to set the record straight on Saturday by punishing Emily Cullen's oversight and helping Antrim record a memorable victory against her beloved Scotland/Wexford hurlers. For what it's worth, I really enjoyed/agreed with 90% of Emily's email, but Antrim being ignored yet again by the powers that be, Emily in this case, really ground my gears. To conclude, I would like to draw a parallel between the Antrim hurlers and Japan in the rugby world. Like Japan, Antrim is considered by some to be a distant outpost of the sport's heartland, yet they have proven themselves capable of toppling the self-proclaimed bigger hurling counties, as Emily Cullen would have found out on Saturday in Fortress Corrigan Park.
Okay, I thought we'd run out of rugby nations, but it turns out Connor answered the question for us. So thank you, Connor.
This podcast is brought to you by eHarmony, the dating app to find someone you can be yourself with. Why doesn't eHarmony allow copy and paste in first messages? Because you are unique, and your conversations should reflect that. eHarmony wants you to find someone who will get you. How are you going to know who gets you? If people send you the same generic conversation starters, they message everyone else. Conversations that actually help you get to know each other. Imagine that. Get who gets you on eHarmony. Sign up today.
Life is full of awesome what ifs, and some not so much, like unexpected medical costs. That's why United Healthcare provides Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans to supplement your primary plan and help manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
A big schmazzle just in front of the Kerry goal. Bit of a dust up, folks, in the left corner back position. The physio's involved out there now, is she, from Mayo, look?
He is, yeah.
Stewards now, is she, are pulling off a spectator.
A spectator after coming in. A spectator and three,
that's crazy
four stewards. That's crazy stuff, yeah.
You don't want to see
four,
that, like,
yeah. And I tell you, it's taken five. One, two, three, four stewards to hold him and
he's
bring
him back.
He's
a strong man, isn't he?
Here's Colin McFadden. Colin McFadden's got Ryan McKee. The ball's under it. The ball's under it. Ryan McKee.
The kick out again in an absorbing semi-final. Anthony Maher brings it down from the cloud.
They hand pass it over to Colin McFadden. This is the goal for Donegal. Yes! Colin McFadden.
Tight angle. Paul Gainey with the kick. And Paul Gainey with the point.
We're watching to see what McQuillan's going to do. Donegal are back in an All-Ireland final.
And the referee says it's all over.
What an absolutely amazing result by Kerry. What wonderful football by the Kingdom. Up Kerry, up the Kingdom, up Eamon Fitzmaurice, up to Dublin for the All-Ireland.
Some game.
Michael Murphy, how's the form?
Good, Owen. Good.
Did you
Did
you have to do
another
designated driver again this week? I'm asking.
I was driver. All right. Yeah, we had a bit of a handle after the game. Mother parked her car in what she thought was a decent enough car park before the game. But yeah, locked down afterwards. So there was we had to call for reinforcements. We found Bren Devaney. So Bren Devaney actually helped us bring a couple of sets of parents home. So.
Well, hold on a second. You were just bringing your parents this time. It wasn't like a crowd of lads that you've already won in All-Ireland for calling you up again so they can go on the beer for a day.
They've dropped me. They were more sensible. I think they had kids and different ones going this time around.
Yeah,
so they dropped me. Wasn't eventful enough last time, but I'd say they'll be saving it for Clonus. I'd say they'll get the shout again for Clonus.
Oh, Shane, you're trying to get in there?
No, I was just going to say, Devaney, surely he will be able to pick the lock on the gate.
Do you know what? No, he must have thought it better to drive them home than to bring out anything to pick the lock. But yeah, Jesus, the two trips to Celtic Park have been eventful. They've been good.
Dramatic.
Been eventful.
Is the car still sitting there? What's the latest?
The car back in this morning. Got the car. Car's back at home.
Good man.
There, so.
Good to hear.
All good.
Well, we might as well talk about the GAA then.
And
the actual,
if we must.
The actual match you guys were both at together. It was a fun... Tyrone, I was going to be... Let's talk about it from a Donegal point of view, first of all, Michael, because it wasn't as sort of take-your-breath-away impressive as the previous round, but the job was done. They're over the line. They're into an Ulster final. And things are motoring along nicely.
Yeah, listen... Start of the year before the last two games, if you were given this, I think every Donegal person would have taken the hand off to be in an Ulster final to navigate your way through two really good Division One sides in Derry and Tyrone. Being honest, even the most optimistic of supporter, I don't think would have done it. I think after they were in a difficult position after the Derry game with the expectation and the hullabaloo about the performance. I didn't think they were ever going to reach that level, that same level. They were going to find it difficult to reach that level. And that proved to be the case in the first half against Tyrone. They played a very similar style to against Tyrone as what they did against Derry, but they found the going really tough. In fairness, Tyrone were very well set up and kind of out-Donegaled them. You know, out-Donegal, I suppose. But they found a way. They gripped at half-time and they came out with a lot more energy in the second half. You know, a lot more purpose in what they're trying to do and just a lot more quickness and enthusiasm to try and get a go. And listen, it worked, but, you know, such fine margins. You look back in that game and, you know, Tyrone were one up. I think myself and Oisin would have looked at it a number of times. They were one up with a couple of minutes left, even normal time, even with the Donegal burst in the second half. And they kicked the ball away a couple of times for loosely. I think they'll regret.
Tyrone were probably always going to sit off Donegal's kickouts when you saw what Donegal had done to Derry, Ush. But then when you see that Donegal lose Sean Patton in the run-up to the game, do you think maybe Tyrone are sitting back this morning thinking, we actually never asked a question of this extremely inexperienced goalkeeper that Donegal haven't been training with, you know, to the extent, or to, you know, they don't have that experience of playing alongside Mulroney that they have built up over years and years with Sean Patton. Do you think that's a big regret of Tyrone sitting around the table this morning?
Well, I would say that the video walk and the way they prepared for the game was preparing for Sean Patton. So, you know, 40 minutes roughly before, not 40 minutes roughly, 40 minutes before throw-in, they would have known that Sean Patton wasn't playing. And it's a short period of time to try and change things, but I still think it would have been worth the punt to do that. I think especially early on, I thought they missed a trick, because actually the more the game went on, the more Mulroney grew in confidence as a result of the fact that, you know, I think at one stage it was about 25, 26 minutes gone and both keepers were at 100% of the kickouts, even though Morgan had been forced to go long a couple of times. Tyrone actually managed to win those couple of ones that were. But I would have probably rathered Tyrone had wanted more kick to a contest in the middle, because I thought Kennedy and Kilpatrick look well fit for the two boys. So yeah, they'll probably have a few regrets, but like, again, Michael was talking about fine margins. I mean, it's the finest of fine margins yesterday when you consider, like, the one that I keep coming back to, and I don't know why, it just sticks in my mind. Michael McKernan went down the left hand side, solo with his right, and like, never dreaming, because he did actually have a bit of room. He could have even turned on to his right foot, but he had a bit of a pot shot from an angle that, you know, it's going to be a worldie if he's going to kick it from there. He doesn't kick too many points with his left foot. And I thought a lot of the game turned on that, from a Tyrone sort of lost massive confidence from there, and I think Donegal took massive heart in it, in that, you know, Tyrone had mainly done the right thing most of the day, and that just seemed out of character and out of sync with everything else that sort of had gone on. And again, it's only one incident. It's very probably, in the larger scheme of things, if you look back on it, I mean, you know, Tyrone had enough chances to win the game. But yeah, they probably would have regrets that they didn't test Mulroney maybe early on, maybe get him to kick more to a contest in the middle.
Michael, you wanted to come in there?
Yeah, no, nothing really to comment on. You know, Tyrone were really, really efficient in the first half when they had the ball. I think they only had maybe one wide, in the first half versus Donegal's five, I think, with another three potentially dropped short. So Donegal's efficiency in front of goal throughout the whole game definitely left a lot to be desired. But Tyrone had the perfect plan. They executed to a T, and they really caused Donegal damage going forward. It was just Donegal were getting enough chances. I think they had 41 shots total across the 90 minutes, you know, in comparison to 28 for Tyrone, which is a huge difference between the two of them. But you just felt that Donegal were growing in. And I say, when it went into extra time, there really was only one team in it. I think Brian Duher, he kind of summed it up well, I think, in his aftermatch, when he just says the juice had ran out of Tyrone, and which it did, you know. But Donegal even were still chugging to get over the line during extra time, you know.
Yeah, and there was, you know, kind of watching it back, knowing the result, you're kind of looking, at, particularly in extra time, at some of the plays that Ryan McHugh made in extra time, and just this guy Michael, who, you know, opted out last year, is back in the squad now, and he's just such a brilliant player. He's just such a calming presence in that Donegal team, and you know, the final ball that's put into the Donegal box, I think it's Kieran Thompson goes up and wins it, or at least breaks it, and then there's a melee, and then out of nowhere, just it's Ryan McHugh on the ball somehow, and he always seems to be that guy for Donegal.
Yeah, and you know, Derry didn't choose to mark him for the first half, and even a couple of minutes into the second half in the previous game, Conor McCluskey eventually ended up pushing up on him and kind of quietened his influence a small bit. Yesterday, Shawnee O'Donnell went straight onto him, and let's face it, for the first part of the first half, he was quite anonymous, you know, for a period. But it's the mark of a good player. I would imagine that the challenge that Jim would have put to him at half time would have been, listen, you need to stand up, you need to be counted. And he showed brilliant leadership, you know, as that game wore on in the second half. In particular, he was heavily involved in the equaliser, probably a block shot that flashed across Niall Morgan's goal, eventually ending up coming into the path of Brendan McColl. But yeah, listen, extra time's a funny thing, isn't it? Like, it's, you know, there's bodies just heaped everywhere. And sometimes I think it just comes down to the footballers with the brightest minds, I think, that's able to expose some of the spaces that are around the pitch, I think, are tend to find. And
McBrearty too, of course, you know, having been taken off at halftime, he comes on an extra time, misses a few more, but kicks the decisive score of the game, the last score of the game.
Yeah, fell back into the pocket and again showed great character. I think it's a sign of good character when you still want the ball after having an iffy afternoon, I suppose, from his point of view. And it's the mark of a McGuinness teams, you know. And if you look through and you look on paper and you look down on paper, Donegal, you say Gallen, McBrearty, McHugh and Langan, you say probably are your four players, your standout players that you go to. But there's never a reliance on a McGuinness team on one or two. It tends to spread that across. Mark Curran on McCurry was exemplary. He grew into the game even on the ball. Kieran Moore again pushed on. Jason McGee had a huge second half performance. The two O'Donnells, Shane and Niall O'Donnell, were brilliant. So I think he's moulding a side that if one or two ever go quiet, that there's another one or two to hopefully try and step up. And I suppose the team that we'll go on to speak to in the not too distant future, Armagh, I think have moulded that too, that there's just not that over-reliance on one or two anymore, that one or two can always step up to fill the void of the key men when they are being man-marked out of the game, you know.
Well, just before, we were talking about extra time being a funny thing. There's also the fatigue factor that I think Tyrone seemed to suffer from. Oisín looked that way on TV. There was cramping. There was lads barely able to go. Niall Morgan's having to sprint back towards his own goal, chasing balls, all that kind of stuff there. Did Tyrone run out of gas a little bit?
Seemed like it. Seemed like the run out of bodies as well. You know, when you looked at we looked at both benches, and Donegal definitely edges on the bench. And I thought it was purely from a legs point of view. Not so much, you know, they're quality players, but they're not. I don't think there's any of them. It's fair to say there's none of them real game changers. But they looked as if they had a lot more legs. I thought McGuinness did well with the fact that in extra time it is very important that when you do have that opportunity to change your team, to play a new 15, that you choose wisely, because you still only have three subs. So in a situation like that, it is good to freshen things up. And also be mindful of the fact I only have three subs. So if you have four lads who are, you know, who are cramping or look as if they're fatigued, it's important to get them out of there, or at least get two or three out of there, because you don't have the luxury of six or five or six substitutions. And I thought Tyrone sort of went a little bit same, and they could have, maybe that was their opportunity to inject something a little bit different.
I didn't actually realise that when you said, once the game finishes in normal time, you can make as many substitutions before the ball is thrown in for extra time. And that one, Donegal made three, I think. I don't know if Tyrone made any.
Yeah, because we were querying, actually. I thought Donegal initially, if you remember, we thought it was four, but I think it was three, because was it McColgan had come on just at the end of the game? But like, you could just see there was a marked difference, and I don't think that was a fitness thing. I think it was just a case of fresh legs, and I think, you know, Tyrone obviously had gone to extra time the week four, and I did think, as much as I sort of tried to play that down, I do think that's probably had some sort of relevance on it. But I did think that Donegal were full value for the win in extra time, but Tyrone probably should have wrapped it up in normal time.
Somebody has to stop this McGuinness juggernaut here, Oisín. Why not Kieran McGeaney and Armagh?
Brilliant opportunity. I would say there's a healthy rivalry between Donegal and Armagh as well. It has a bit of spice about it. I don't really know what the relationship is between Geezer and McGuinness, but it seems a little bit fractious, even though it looked very harmonious after the Division 2 final. So I think all of those things add to the game. The fact that they've already played themselves twice, and familiarity does breed a bit of contempt, which is brilliant from the supporters and people looking on. I think Armagh are lucky that they had the game they had at the weekend. I think a facile victory against Down would have done us no good whatsoever. Maybe not as close as what it should have been, but definitely if Armagh were looking for a wake-up call, they got it at the weekend, because if you're slightly off it in football now, apart from maybe three teams, maybe two or three teams, you are going to be put to the pin of your collar, because teams are so well prepared now for what's coming down the track, and Armagh would have a fair idea what's coming down the track now. And I think that forearmed is forewarned and all that, but I do think it's a brilliant opportunity for Armagh to win the Ulster Championship.
Any insight, Michael, on the McGeaney-McGuinness relationship?
Yeah, I mean, if we're to speculate wildly here, then let's just go for it. I mean, does it date back to their playing career against each other? I mean, Let's just talk about this.
Here we go. Does it have to come up with something here now? Probably. I think the Kildare time when Geezer was over at Kildare, I think probably leading up to that quarter final, I remember there might have been a little bit of aggro. Memory can't serve me right back to what it was maybe about. I think maybe calling out a referee or some sort. Mm. I think it might have been mentioned in the lead up by Geezer on it, but. Yeah, it seems to be the last couple of occasions, definitely. There seem to be a lot more huggy and lovey-dovey on the sideline after games, don't they? Big, long handshakes and hugs. But I think they're just two competitive animals. They're two county men, McGuinness and Donegal, Geezer and Armagh. It's just, it's dog-eat-dog. Like, I just think they're two competitive animals along the sideline, you know?
And I think that competitive edge that they both obviously have, pretty obvious from their playing days and the managerial days, I think probably there's going to be a little bit of pressure on both managers, as much as, you know, McGuinness is early on into his term and Geezer is further down the lane as far as the amount of years he's had to prep. But there's a bit of pressure on Geezer. He'll admit that himself, you know, to come up with a trophy. And probably the fact that McGuinness has got to Donegal to an Ulster final already, I'm sure there'll be a little bit of pressure that side as well. So that should make for it to be even more heated on the sideline, which is only brilliant for everybody else who's watching on.
I think it is going to be a heavyweight slugfest. I think it's just going to be everybody behind the ball that is going to be. Clonus is going to feel as claustrophobic as it's ever felt, and it's going to be. I'm trying to sell this as exciting, but it's going to be. Trying to find any little space forwards are going to find. It's going to be bravery. There's going to be, they're everything going to be thrown into it. I think it's just going to be a real titanic tussle.
Yeah. And, you know, like, we shouldn't expect any different, Oisin, really, in a lot of ways. And if the weekend taught us anything, it's that if you give a coach a chance to express themselves with their own team or to just try and minimise the damage that the other crowd are going to do, the coach will always just try and minimise the damage of the opposition. I mean, watching Down in Armagh, I mean, I have to say there is a thing going on here, I think, with Conor Laverty, that his reputation is far bigger than results.
Than him.
Than him, exactly, yeah, as well. But, I mean, like, Down just, they do flatter to deceive. I mean, what Conor Laverty has managed to do is he's managed to convince his club mates to play for Down. And what else? You know, like, they keep losing these big games. They keep losing finals. They keep actually playing terrible in these big games. And so I'm just kind of looking at it going, again, on Saturday, like, they, I mean, 2-6 is a bizarre, you know, like, that's a ridiculous score to kick for a senior intercounty team over 70 minutes. And, you know, like, they managed to shut down Armagh. They managed to ask a lot of tough questions of Armagh. But, I mean, Jesus, like, there's got to be more to it than just how do we stop the other crowd, as opposed to, right, let's actually go and try and play some ball here.
Right, Muff. I agree with you, and I disagree with you. Okay, I agree.
That's 50% better than usual.
Yeah, but I suppose I sort of had, I definitely had a begrudging respect because when I was heading down to Clonus in the car, the two boys were with me. We had no panic. We were nice and relaxed. I had already told them we'll win this by 10 at least. So just go down, enjoy the occasion, all that there. They're standing down at the wire, looking at me going, it's not supposed to be like this. And you have to give down credit for that. For the fact that, okay, you're trying to stop the opposition, but when the opposition is a couple of rungs ahead of you physically, and I do think from a football point of view, I think Armagh are a couple of rungs ahead of Down. So they do deserve credit for coming up with what they come up with, and the fact that they turned the game into, like I described it yesterday, and I might be over egging it a bit, but it was poison. It was very, very, very difficult to watch. It was a very difficult watch. It really was. But you know what? I don't know whether it's because of my age, or whether it's because of the punditry, or whether it's the management or whatever. But like, there's so many different ways to win a game of Gaelic football now, and we have coaches who are willing to explore all those things. And I think, what else could Laverty have done at the weekend? Only what he done. I mean, for them to get in within a point of Armagh, I think, coaching wise, player wise, I think they've done really, really well. But I also agree with you in that, you know, there comes a time then when you have to start winning some of these games. And I had this thing a couple of weeks ago where, you know, down people were saying to me about the fact it was an injustice that they were in the Tailteann Cup. But they're in the Tailteann Cup for a reason, you know, because they haven't done enough to get out of it. And when the Tailteann Cup was up for grabs, and when there was a possibility of the Ulster Championship being changed or us getting rid of the provincials, the first person to stand up in that day in Congress was a Down man, and they wanted to have this. So, I mean, sometimes you reap what you sow. Down are not there yet. They're improving. They are improving. They'll be in Division 2 next year. That's a massive test for them. And that can be the catalyst for them to improve again. On the weekend, they probably couldn't have done much more. Kicked the free kicks over the bar. And, you know, it's a completely different game. What did they miss? Did they miss 6-7 really kickable chances? And then Armagh are, you know, we're having a completely different conversation. On the flip side of that, from an Armagh point of view, for them to win a game like that, that we have lost on numerous occasions over the last 3 and 4 years, it felt good. I won't deny it. Like, the performance and all that, yes, pick holes in it, yes. But just to win one of them was really nice. Really, really nice.
What do you reckon, Michael, just on the Down stuff there?
Yeah, listen, they were my team to watch for this year. I was so excited to see them. I'd kind of followed wee bits of their passage through Division 3 and seeing they were racking up scores. I thought the addition of Kieran Mina would add a bit of more of an attacking structure to their strong runners that they all have. But they were better at the weekend. They were definitely better and more incisive at the weekend than they were in the two times that I've watched them this year, watched them in the league final. Extremely disappointing against Westmeath. They keep speaking about it. Just for what was on the line that night, not only winning something in silverware, but like Sam Maguire football was on the line that night. You didn't get a sense of urgency or, you know, desire or just absolute, you know, anxiety even over their performance. There was no worry about it, you know, whereas I think we did see that at the weekend. And we didn't see it actually against Antrim in the opening round either, and they probably didn't need to show it, but that was still no excuse. But I think we did see it against Armagh, in fairness to them, that they were that little bit better. They went at it a bit more. They took on Armagh a bit more. Liam Kerr, McGill coming on for them made huge difference in the second half in terms of cutting open and cutting holes. But
yeah, they didn't start them though. Like that, you know, I'm looking at it going,
They started with two. I think they were really worried about Armagh's matchup. So say Armagh really have six forwards you have to mark. Now, I know none of them scored from play at the weekend, but you had to mark them all. And I think Down looked at their own defence and said, geez, we have a lot of players to go forward here, but we need to take off a few of our forwards to add on a few defenders. They did that, and listen, by the rights, it worked well. But listen, Oisin touching it, Intercounty is a ruthless, horrible game in a way. And Pat Hevron, I'm sorry, but you had three free kicks in the first half. You're in and around 30 metres out. They cannot miss them. Pierce Laverty, I'll have a bit of sympathy. He's a man marker. He won a mark near the end of the game. Again, you're 30 out on the wing. There's a bit of an out on that one. And again, Intercounty football, if you're looking for an equaliser and it's down to the last kick of the game and your free taker's an outside of the right boot merchant on the right-hand side to try and equalise in an Ulster semi-final, it's ruthless, it's horrible. But like, if you're trying to cause an upset and you're trying to win an Ulster semi-final, you know, those need to be all nailed, you know.
Can I ask about Leinster, Oisin, which you have a vested interest in, obviously. So Louth get into a Leinster final. The first time since the 1950s, I think they've been in back-to-back Leinster finals. Why did they look even less excited than Dublin had when they beat Offaly? It just looked like, is this how far Kildare have fallen, that they Louth just beat them and expect to get into the Leinster final?
It tells you something about how far Louth have come in a number of years, and I suppose people would have expected there'd be a downturn in performance, or that when Mickey Hart left, but you know, that hasn't happened. I don't think they've improved dramatically or anything like that, but I think they expect to be in Leinster finals now. They fancy themselves as being the second best team in Leinster, and they want to keep proving that. Now, there are people who will tell you, oh, why would you want to come up against Dublin in it? But sure, that has to be the challenge that these lads want. I mean, I heard Tony McEntee talking before the Galway game, the honesty was, what do you want from today's game, Tony? Well, I want to make sure that we don't get beat by 20 like we did last year. I want to reduce that. So, Louth are in a similar position. They're testing themselves against the best, and they've got to keep giving themselves opportunities to do that. I think there was a massive lack of atmosphere in Croke Park yesterday. And I think I'm not going to keep repeating it. I think it was a mistake to play those games in there yesterday with 20,000 in it, at it. And I think there was a... When you go to Croke Park, you probably expect, in the semi-final of a Leinster Championship, you probably expect a little bit more atmosphere-wise. And I think it just felt like a really drab, dead day. But I go back to your first point. Is that what Louth expected to do to Kildare? Yes, and a little bit more, I would imagine, because there's a real air of confidence. It's Ger Brennan has come in and he has facilitated them really, really well. It's a very much a player-led outfit, as you could probably see. And they have managed to go back-to-back. Nobody could tell you, Owen, how poor things were 4 years ago, 5 years ago in Louth. So where they are now is testimony to everybody and their management. And they're in an under-20 final tonight as well. So there's so much to like about what Louth have done, but there is also that inevitability about what is going to happen in a Leinster final. But again, if you're Louth, what do? You want to be there. You want to get yourself to a Leinster final. And they've managed to do that 2 years in a row and proven that they are far and away the second best team in Leinster. And what did they do with this final? Well, they try at the very least to compete with them with Dublin for 35 minutes, test yourself against the best, and as I say, reduce the Dublin from last year.
Yeah, you know, it's very easy, probably, Michael, to just sit here and rag on Kildare again, because They've just been terrible all year, though, you know? And so I think it's probably better to just focus on the fact that actually...
Oh, Shane's smiling there, by the way.
Yeah.
I mean...
You're really something on the fence today, Mur, first of but they have... the likes of Kildare and Down, aren't they?
Well, yeah, I mean... talk about easy targets, though. Bloody hell. I mean, there's nothing left to say about this Kildare team in a lot of ways, you know? But really, what Oisin was talking there in relation to Ger Brennan, I mean, that is, in a lot of ways, the toughest job in intercounty management, taking over from a guy who, as Oisin says, like totally revolutionised how Louth footballers think and play and act over the course of 3 years. And talk about a hiding to nothing that Ger Brennan went in on. And he has actually managed, whether he's built massively on it or not, you have to give him a lot of credit for managing to walk in there last November to that group of players and say, I know that you think Mickey Hart and Gavin Devlin were the reason that you guys got better in a hurry, but it's not. The work that you've banked is work that you've banked, and we can build on it. And it you know, the idea that your chance of achieving anything has walked out the door with Mickey Hart, that's not actually how it has to be. You have to give that an awful lot of respect, I think.
Yeah, you do. And I'll come back to it on the Louth Kildare one. You do definitely have to give Ger Brennan a lot of respect. And I would say, footballers not too long out of an intercounty dressing room too, any dressing room for that matter, I'd say there's a bit of something in them Louth players too to shove it up the two lads that left them. You know, Sam Mulroy was extremely vocal after it in terms of Louth football is going to carry on, Louth football is going to keep going, and we're going to keep going. So I'd say there's a bit of ownership from them lads, in fairness too, to say that, you know what, yeah, Mickey Hart and Gavin Devlin showed us the way. Ger Brennan is back in here now, and he's doing his bit, but we're also showing the way. You know, Oisin said it seems to be a player-led and an environment, you know, but... You know, you have a bit of something within you as a player from Louth to throw yourself at something. To go back to the Kildare one, the thing I really like about Louth, and there's a message in it for Kildare too, is, you know, you never heard coming out of Louth, you know, complaining about, you know, maybe there's a complaint over a disallowed goal numerous years ago, but nothing about structures or lack of this or lack of that. Themselves, they went and done something about it over the last number of years, you know. They got themselves house in order, got things right, similar to Derry, eventually got their house, get their order and right. And the likes of Kildare's, Cork's, big, maybe underachieving type counties that you think you are, grab the thing and sort it out and get it right internally within yourselves and push on, you know, and don't be looking for excuses about structures, fixtures, games, complaints, that kind of way, and push on, you know.
Yeah, that's fair enough.
Oh, don't take this the wrong way, but I really hope Louth win the Leinster Championship because it'll stop my in-laws rabbiting on about 2010. Like, it's fucking 14 years ago.
Oh, it's still going strong. We had Brian Farrell on a couple of weeks ago, and he still gets it. He lives near the Louth border there, and he still gets it every time he goes shopping, he says. So what can you do? Oisin, last word to you. Tailteann Cup draw is tomorrow. Who do you want? Who do you want to take down there?
Well, I better not get down or Kildare now.
I noticed you say quiet on the Kildare bit there, all right.
After what?
You've got a lot of respect. You've got a world of respect for both Down and Kildare.
After what Morphy's landed me in there, but look, we're just going to take what we get. We let ourselves down badly in the Tailteann Cup last year, and the aim is to rectify that. And you think you're going to take a bit of momentum out of the two performances, but like, they seem about 4 years ago now, so we just had to wait for the draw. And you know what, the draw will definitely give us some focus at the very least.
Yeah.
Once we have that, then you know you can prepare accordingly. But actually, really looking forward to it now. Looking forward to the rest of the season.
So you want Kildare again? Okay, great. Oisin, thanks so much. Michael, glad the car got sorted in the end. Michael, thanks so much.
Thanks, boys. All right.
Owen McDevitt from Ireland's Second Captain Show.
Owen McDevitt, you're a cold piece of work.
You're looking good. I know you're feeling good.
Owen, you're amazing.
I'm like, yeah.
2,000 podcast recordings today and the Second Captain Show in Ireland. Owen McDevitt.
Owen, I like you and I like your style.
Yeah. I hear you in your 40s and you're bald headed. Let's just put it this way, you're ahead of the game.
Owen McDevitt.
Hey, Jack Charlton, we're just about out of time. Been a pleasure talking to you.
I can't believe it, dog. I know what 2,000 is. And that's a heck of a feat. But any man, I love your style.
It's delicious.
I'm Owen McDevitt.
Owen McDevitt.
He's a non-event as far as I'm concerned.
You're ball-headed.
McIlroy leading a room of pissed up golf fans in a rendition of Journey's Don't Stop Believing with Shane Lowry beside him after the pair had won the Zurich Classic of New Orleans together.
It was pretty good fun. Tuned in late doors. I didn't see a whole pile of this, but I did see the them playing the 18th and then the playoff. Now, I mean, they got a par on a par 5 to win a playoff. And the poor lads they were playing literally didn't hit one good shot in the entire
Exactly household names.
No, they weren't.
But listen, that's neither here nor there.
I mean,
this FedEx points up for grabs, Murph. It's a legit tournament.
It is. It is. And it seemed like they had a hell of a time.
Yeah.
I mean, New Orleans seems like a lot of fun if you're Rory McIlroy and Shane Lowry.
Lowry said Rory carried him to the win on the course, and he was carrying him in that clip as well. Just standing there thinking, I'll leave Rory with the mic here. Do we both need to get involved in this? Probably not.
Yeah, I mean,
I'll just post it on my social media afterwards, please, Shane Lowry.
Yeah, and get those clicks without me having to abase myself by singing. Maybe Shane doesn't back his singing voice. Although I think, I'm pretty sure we saw him singing after he won the Open.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I mean, he's got the pipes. You know, let's hear you, Shane.
Thanks, Murph.
Thank you, Owen. Thank you again.
Thank you, Owen. Thank you, Kieran.
Thanks for listening. We'll see you during the week. All episodes are ad-free. Remember, if you become a World Service member, and the Second Gabbas podcast is part of the Acast Creator Network.
Whose phone is that? That's the second time it's gone off.
They never go home, those boys.
The second captain's World Service.
It is not war and death and famine. It's not that at all. It's the opposite of that. It's the persuasion of the world outside of that. That's why sport's important.
This message comes from BOF sponsor eBay. You'll know real when you get it. It'll say eBay Authenticity Guarantee. And you'll feel it. Maybe it's a head-turning handbag, a watch that says it all, jewelry that makes you look like the gem, or sneakers and streetwear so fresh every step feels fly. eBay gets it. So look for the blue check mark next to that thing you love. And be confident that every inch, stitch, sole, and logo is checked by experts. With eBay Authenticity Guarantee, you can trust that feeling of real is always in reach. Ensure your next purchase is the real deal. Visit ebay.com for terms.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.